This episode of Your Favorite Band is brought to you by Spartan Records. They have a brand new band called Young Fox, whose debut album, Sky Beats Gold, comes out on March 10th. Pre-order that bad boy today and get two songs instantly. Check out SpartanRecords.com. Welcome to the Your Favorite Band podcast, a podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. My name's Brandon, and I'm with my best friend in the entire world, Dave. Dave, how are you?
You know, the more you say it, Brandon, the more I believe you.
I practice that whole thing on the I look at myself in the mirror, even though this is an audio thing, and just kind of say that over and over and over again as fast as I can, and I feel like I'm getting better at it.
Yeah.
Dave, yeah. Can you give it a... I've never heard you say it. The whole, you know, favorite band thing. Could you give it a go?
Can I use the acronym?
Yeah, that's fine.
So YFBP?
It sounds, yeah.
Welcome to the YFBP, where we talk to YFBP about how they became YFBP.
No, you can't say, we're not talking to your favorite band podcast, we're talking to your favorite bands.
Okay.
You're an idiot.
Welcome to the YFBP, where we talk to YFB about how they became YFBP.
We lost every listener we've ever had because of you.
No, no, because they would be like, put a PB out because, UP, yeah. Acronyms are not as good when you put them in actual conversations. Like, you know, people be like BTW, but they usually end up doing like BT dubs.
Yeah.
And then and things like that. Because you kind of end up doing like a nickname for already a acronym.
Right.
So it's always interesting to see how those will go down.
So... what everyone has been wondering, and people have been emailing us at yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. They've been saying, guys, I want to support. I want to love you. I want to all this stuff. You know what I mean, Dave?
Brian, I'm on the wake of Valentine's Day. If there's one thing that I understand, it's fans love.
Right. And so here's what we always say. First, find us on the socials. You find us, Your Favorite Band Podcast, just find us on Facebook, Insta, and Twitter. We have a very active Twitter following. Like, they're always like, hey, you should interview these people. And it's super helpful. And so we do want to hear who you guys want to interview because, again, it's your favorite band. Dave and I have been privileged to interview some of our favorite bands, but we do want to interview your favorite bands, just like today's episode was from somebody. So, hey, do that. Also, Dave, one huge thing that people can do. Do you know what that is?
Rate us on iTunes.
Yes. Here, people underestimate. This is not like me just saying stuff. People do underestimate the power of the iTunes review. Even if you're like a Google Play guy, just go on to iTunes and review us. Give us what you think we deserve, 5 stars. And and after you do that, click confirm or send or whatever it is. And it does help us. It helps us when people are searching, like if they're wanting a music podcast, if we have more reviews, we will pop up sooner if you understand what I'm saying. So people don't have to seek us out as much. We're just more right there in people's faces. So for instance, if I went on iTunes right now and I typed in great interviews, Mark, yeah, WTF would pop up, and I'd be like, he's not that great. But, you know, so on and so forth.
And, yeah, and not only that, but it makes us look good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and it's also helpful for myself. Like, we struggle. I can say that. I can be open. This is a safe place. I struggle with feeling like people don't care.
About you, right.
About me and the pod, mainly. No, I feel loved as a human, but as a pod... I sometimes feel like, do we matter? Do we have significance? Do people care? I don't know.
Like, me and Brian are just two peas in a podcast, and we don't know if people want to steam us.
And I swear, if someone steals that podcast name, so help me.
Two peas in a podcast?
Yes. That's a great idea. We talk about vegetables.
Bowls of vegetables.
No, there's got to be something better we can do with that. Like two peas. We talk about pee stories. We just exchange stories of where we were when we were peeing and something.
No. I knew you would go there, and I wanted to cut you off now. Two peas in a podcast. What about if it was like two people? Yeah. The two piece, two people in a podcast. That's pretty much what we have now.
Yeah. Okay. So we're just going to rename the show.
Two pieces in a podcast. That's the worst.
Hey, Dave, another thing I was thinking about, I want to make, we're doing something where on some off weeks, we're going to be putting out something called Your Next Favorite Band on the same exact podcast stream and all that stuff, but it'll be smaller bands. The qualifications are they have less than 10,000 fans on Facebook and like less than a certain number on Twitter. I don't remember, but they got to be smaller. Gotcha. And we're going to be interviewing some smaller bands and try to give them a little more exposure. We do think there's a lot of great bands out there that people don't know of, and it could be some of these bigger bands that you don't know either. We want to do both of those things, so bring you some smaller bands to keep your eye on and some bigger bands that have a longer discography for you guys to dive into. So that's our goal. That's our mission statement. Our mission statement at Your Favorite Band is we pledge, you know it, Dave, say it with
me. Yeah, already.
We pledge to give our fans interviews with their favorite bands and their next favorite bands for all time ever. Yep. And if you got an idea for a better pledge, a better mission statement, you can email us yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com.
We could do putting the YFB in the podcast.
Yep. That's it.
Yep. All right. Well, Bran, the phone's ringing on your side, so I'll let you get that.
Hello? Okay, bye. I gotta tell you about our new sponsor. Yeah, you heard it right. Our new sponsor. It's a brand new band off of Spartan Records. You've got to check this band out. It's called Young Fox. They're amazing. They've got their first album coming out on March the 10th. Now, here's the thing. They've got this song out right now. It's called Slow Burn, and it's super good, but it also features the guest vocals of our good friend Stephen Christian. We've had him on the show. He's wonderful. We love him. And anything that he puts his fingers on is sure to turn to gold, and we know that will be true with Slow Burn and Young Fox. We're excited about this band. We're excited about this album, Sky Beats Gold, that comes out on March 10th, and you can pre-order it now. Get Slow Burn and get another song instantly. No need to wait. So go check out SpartanRecords.com to find out more about how you can pre-order this album. Again, that is Young Fox. Slow Burn is the new single off their debut album, Sky Beats Gold, out March 10th. If you don't get it, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. They're so good, so good, so good. Go check it out. Go check it out. Go check it out. This is a slow. Dave, today we have a great band. The acronym for them is VLB. So please,
and they
welcome,
put out some serious LPs.
That's exactly right. So please welcome the LB, also known as the Last Bison, to the show. Fellas, how are you today?
So good. It is early and we are drinking coffee, and some of us have been asleep for 2 to 4 hours.
Oh boy.
You guys sound like you're really in a band, right? Isn't that just the way things are when you're in a band and doing stuff?
We really are in a band.
You got, if you were unsure, now you know that you are.
Yeah.
Moments of clarity.
That's exactly right.
Your favorite band podcast.
YFB. It is great to hear from you guys, and I'm excited to talk to you guys. We threw out the invitation for our listeners to give us bands to interview, and you guys, we heard multiple people say, you got to get the Last Bison on. And so I said, okay. And here you are today. So fans out there, good job. Do you have anything that you want to say to those fans that said that you're the reason that they're here? You're here today.
Thanks, Bay.
Thanks, Bay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Andrew.
TY.
I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Yeah. Before anyone else. anyone at all. It is the show that we do where every week or so we talk to a band and kind of tell their story. We talk about their albums and we talk about where they're going next. So let's start from the beginning, boys. Talk about how y'all formed and how you ultimately landed on launching a band with the indie folk sound that you guys are known for. Talk about the beginning and how you guys got to where you are style wise.
And maybe can you each say your name? Because we usually only have one person, but
can
tell apart the two of you.
All right, right to left, we have...
This is Andrew Benfante.
Plays keys and brings a lot of energy and great musical skills.
And makes yummy foods.
I'm Ben Hardesty. I play guitar and sing. And this is...
Hey, it's a same as... I'm Ben's brother-in-law, or Ben's little brother.
And what do you do, Amos?
That's it. That's what I do. That's what I am.
That's about right.
He's a punching bag.
Yeah.
I need one.
I take the verbal, emotional, and physical abuse for the guys.
You're more important than you know, Amos.
I just wish I knew. One day.
Wish I knew anything.
You have to be careful. No, about any affirmation at all.
I do play. I play bass and I play cello. And sometimes yell at guys.
All right. So that being, we didn't miss anyone, did we? I don't actually think I knew how many people were on.
We were gonna just like fake it and add a couple people in here, and be like, "And I'm Larry."
You just keep bringing people out.
Yeah, this is a good opportunity to work on the character sketch because since there's no video, really, you have the world is your oyster at that point for the personalities. So. Back to the question Brian was asking, can you guys get into the early stages of how you guys launched the band and found your sound?
Take it away, Ben.
Sure. Yeah. Early stages, I'm not going to go back to me playing under the Bison moniker in high school. I'm going to go to after I lived in England for a year and came back and wanted to start Last Bison. And I think that if I had consulted others about what kind of band I had, it wouldn't have necessarily started as an indie folk band. Mm-hmm. But I, in my charismatic, oppressive manner, made us a folk band because that's what I was into. And I had written a bunch of songs that I wanted to start playing out, and I just gathered my friends and family, people that I like playing music with. And so it was, in the beginning stages, it was really just kind of the aesthetic that I had and liked that I brought into this space. And all my friends were loving and supportive enough to just get 100% behind it. I know Andrew probably would have chosen a much different genre to play.
Yeah, but I didn't know anything back then either, so.
That's true. We all didn't know anything. So, that's kind of how it started. I loved folk music. I think most kids in high school my age liked folk music then.
Foxes was hype.
Yeah, I remember Andrew, I was over at his house one night, and he's like, you gotta listen to this EP that came out.
No, I called you on the phone. I was on iTunes browsing like the new music, and it was like the day it came out, and I was so proud that I'd found something cool before anybody else.
Except for Apple.
Because that never happened.
Except for Apple.
Yeah. But I mean, I was like 14, so I didn't know any better. So I called Ben on the phone and I was like, you need to listen to this. I think I played him some of it through the phone. Really, really funny.
Nice.
That's great. I do want to point out, though, that you found something that somebody found for you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I was an idiot.
Don't be too proud of yourself in this regard.
Are you shutting me down already? No, you want to go, man?
No, you're doing a great job.
Okay. This is hilarious.
Thank you.
But the days of Magellan are over. It's like the internet age, nothing hasn't been found, you know?
Apple is the last Magellan.
Apple is the last Magellan.
So in finding kind of that that indie folk sound that was kind of coming out in that day, you started to write music. Talk about how you were writing music at the time. Were you writing music together, or Ben, were you mainly writing music and bringing stuff to the guys, or how did all that work?
Honestly,
you're writing songs.
Yeah, we just recently started writing music together, and
we're not writing songs.
Not even songs so much, except for a couple on this album we're working on right now, but I'm sure that'll be something that is shaping more and more into writing together. In the early days, I just written a bunch of songs, so I brought songs to the band. And that's kind of the way it's been most of the part in the last couple of years. Either Andrew and I have brought songs to the band. But in those early days, you know, I just had a handful of songs. So I brought those to the band, and we, I guess, arranged them together, if you will, but didn't do so much writing of the song. So the chord structures and lyrics were all there. And we filled that out with music as a band.
Sure.
Yeah, that was more or less Dave? The whole writing process for a very long
right.
time.
Yeah, that's just now starting to shift in the last, like, 6 months.
The last record, Virginia, was definitely more collaborative in the arrangement process. There wasn't as much, like, it wasn't just like, this is Ben's vision. It started becoming more like a collaborative vision, and that has morphed into a, like, sharing of the way we create songs from the ground up.
I think when we started the band, we had really great musicians, but while some of them were great at arrangement, I knew that not everybody had ever worked in that capacity, and so I think I stepped in, this is Ben talking, and tried to help them write and learn to create, and in doing so, sometimes just ended up doing that for everybody, whether I wanted to or not. And over the last few years, I had to learn, like, when some of those people kind of came into their own, it was kind of naturally easy for me to back off that, even though I don't think I did that so much with, like, you and Pops and Amos.
No.
Or even Anna. But Teresa, who used to play violin with us, she was just so steeped in classical music that she really wasn't able to just write on the spot at all. And when she left the band a year and a half ago, or two, I don't remember, a year and a half ago or so, maybe two, she was able to just sit in a room and come up with parts left and right and, quote, if you will, use the term jam. She could just play with musicians, which she could not do before. So I count that as one of our greatest successes as a band, is getting a classically trained violinist to be able to play in a band context naturally.
Mm-hmm. It's a great feat.
It is difficult, for sure.
So for you guys' very first album, Quill, which was released independently, it says that you guys recorded the whole thing in 2 days. Can you talk about what it was like to do the first album and how, I mean, you kind of described where you guys were at early on, but how did that translate to the studio when you guys were recording?
Well, we rehearsed real hard, and we got in the studio, and we tracked the songs.
We had enough money for 2 days, so we knew we had to do it in 2 days.
I mean, we honestly did not... We didn't really care, honestly, about what was going on. We just realized that there were people who were enjoying our music, and they wanted something tangible, and... We were like, well, I guess we're going to give them something tangible, and so I guess we'll make a record.
Well, I guess we'd been playing that music for, like a year and a half at that point?
No, not even.
6 months.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we recorded in the summer of 2011. You played your first show in January of the same year.
Oh. Well, it felt like we were all, like, pretty good at playing the songs, and we recorded in a live session. Like, you know, pretty much everything was recorded live, minus, like, the vocals and maybe, like, some of the percussion, but... it definitely made the process. It was kind of like set up mics, play a jam, a lot like we would like for like a, I don't know, like a Wild Honey Pie session or something. It was very similar.
And we did it with the engineer. We did it at minimum wage studios in Richmond, Virginia, and with the engineer there, Lance Kohler. He was, I just want to plug his name. He's an amazing, amazing engineer, really great guy. And he was very much responsible for getting that album done in 2 days.
It's really funny, actually. He told me after the album came out, about a year later, that... So we were just a bunch of kids that went and recorded in his basement, which is a sweet spot. And, you know, it's just a room. And he just leaves stuff on and records live, and his speakers are on low in the same room. Like, he's just like... He just doesn't care. He's just like, I'm going to do what I want, and I know it's going to sound good because I'm going to make it sound good. And that, to me, is kind of his modus operandi.
And yeah, that rubbed off on us a little bit.
It did.
For a while.
But that album was not, like, a perfect album. Like, I think more times than I would like to remember, I'd be like, man, guys, should we just stop and, like, tune maybe? Like, looking back, like, I don't think we ever, like, all tuned to the same.
Amos, shut it. We don't have time to tune. We got 2 days, man. And Teresa had, her sister had shut her finger in a door.
Oh, that's right. And you were sick.
The day before, so she couldn't even play the first day. So all the violin was done in the second day. And,
that's right. She came up a date.
But my favorite thing about it was that Lance, like, I was going back to what I said, a year later said to my father and I, he was like, yeah, you guys, I had, like, heavy hitter engineers that are, like, published and stuff and have, like, serious blogs, like, reaching out to me saying, how did you get that great room sound? And I always just answered, well, we recorded it in a room.
It is what it is. How much did 2 days of recording cost?
Was it 2000?
Not even close.
Hugs and a.
I'm pretty sure that mastering, recording,
making CDs.
That's right, because he mastered
and
it
making
too.
CDs, like physical copies, was all like $2,500.
Twas the woodcutter's son.
But, I mean, eventually helped get you guys signed to Universal. So talk about how you guys went from recording in a room in 2 days to getting signed to Universal.
I mean, well, you know, it's just one person hears something and they show it to the next person.
No, well, it was the charts is where that came
from.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. It's like,
but,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it started off like one person who just gave it to another person who put it on the radio, blah blah blah, or came out to a show and blah blah blah, and then we get, I mean, when they started playing our song like heavily, like, then we started getting attention from labels, and I mean, that's,
yeah, I can go into a little more detail about that too. So we played a little show at a bar in Chesapeake, Virginia called Winston's, where a friend's band was headlining, and it was weird. We were like this folk band that I made everyone dress really weird, and we were opening for like this pop punk band, and
I'm sure they dressed weird too.
Yeah.
Just in a different direction.
They did. Studded belts will never be cool.
Absolutely.
Wait, what show is this?
I hope neither of you guys are wearing.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not wearing anything.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, everyone at FYBP wears that belt.
Yeah, sweet. I like them. They're my favorite.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
The guy in the band that was headlining there had a friend who was playing a show in our local big hometown venue called the Norva, and was like, hey, I don't know if you guys need bands for this show, but we had a band play with us this week that would be a great fit. And, like, the same week, that band called the Aragona Project reached out and was like, hey, will you guys play the Norva with us? And we were probably going to play first that night or something, but we ended up selling, I think, more tickets than a lot of people.
I think it was, like, than everyone else.
And so we ended up getting to play second and, I mean, not like second to last, right before them. And there were a lot of people there. And we just kind of realized that there was a lot of momentum in the local area from this. So from there, the guy who used to book all the shows at the Norvo, his name is Chris Bates. He sent our music to a guy named Ross Froelich, who had a late night specialty show at our modern alternative station in town, 96X. And from there, Ross hosted a show with a band called River James, which is the drummer from a band called May.
Yeah.
So it was the drummer from May's band with a project with Vince, who's used to be in a band. Army of Me was his project. Still doing that?
Yeah, he's still doing Army of Me.
Oh, nice. And so we opened for River James, and Jacob, their drummer, was apparently shocked and excited. And James Steele, who is a program manager. What a great radio name. At 96X was there as well.
Great.
And he came up to us afterwards and was like, I'm going to put you boys on the radio. I love you guys. And Jacob came up to me afterwards and he was like, hey, I want to get together with you. Sorry about that. I want to get together with you and talk about some stuff. So the next day I got together with Jacob for coffee in the morning and ended up spending 10 hours with him, which it ended up with my dad and I getting Mexican food with him. And apparently he wasn't planning to do this, but at some point in that meal he just said, hey, I think I want to manage you guys. So Jacob was our first manager, and I love him and miss him a lot. He was a serious champion of ours and just really believed in us, which is really what we needed. And within that same month, we started getting heavy radio play on 96X, which is honestly a little, I don't know what the word is. It was pretty.
It was crazy.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy.
It was weird.
Program managers don't do that, and they're not allowed to do that. But James did it anyways because he's just an out-of-the-box guy. And because it spiked so hard on the charts locally, labels started seeing that in SoundScan charts, and we started getting all kinds of emails. And then one came in, like, sometime late 2011 from someone named Patch Culbertson.
Patch?
Yeah, Patch, like as in Patch Adam.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I just imagined this greasy Yankee with the chain.
Maybe a little
cigar and
little mustache.
Yeah, maybe a tiny mustache, slick back hair. Like, I'm gonna sign you guys this band. You're gonna be huge. And,
You're gonna be huge.
And,
huge. Yone Eaters.
They flew us up to New York, and we had a meeting with Jacob. We're like, all right, we're not gonna take this. We're gonna go indie route, and the allure was too magnetic.
Yeah, we said, screw that.
We said,
we'll sign a record deal.
We said, let's do this. I'm 20, everyone else is in their teens.
How cool is this? We were all kind of like worried. It was like, oh no, you sign a label, like you know, and you like sign your soul away. But it seemed like it was actually more of like a, hey, what you guys are doing works. How can we make that bigger?
But we still want to re-record it all.
Yeah, but yeah, we still want to re-record it all, which is kind of the dumbest idea.
Yeah, so we ended up taking our independent album that so many people really liked and taking a fairly chunky recording budget in a nice studio with a decently big name producer and just basically retracking the whole thing. And it just, I don't know if it worked, but I mean, it was kind of an interesting dichotomy to go from like recording in a basement in 2 days to spending a month and a half in LA on the same music
in Sound City.
Yeah, exactly.
In Sound City. Yeah, we were tracking our record where a Dave Grohl tracked drums for Nevermind. It was cool. It was crazy.
And Fleetwood Mac recorded Rumors.
At this point, I still didn't know
so many crazy records there.
Still not sure who any of those people were.
For me. When you say that you're not sure if it worked, would you say that you prefer Quill over Inheritance?
I would personally say yes, and I think that talking to most of our fans and our friends, that I think they would say yes as well.
The problem with it was we had a great momentum going for us, like locally, I'd say in like the 757 or like Virginia region, and anywhere that kind of picked up Quill radio play, it was going. But then when we re-recorded, basically Quill switched out four songs for some newer ones, and did like a little EP teaser. It was all the same stuff. So we basically, it was like we had all this momentum, and it like gave the fans that we've had for what, like almost 2 years at that point? Or 2 years?
Yeah.
Literally had all the exact same content and gave it right back to them.
Yeah.
And it just stopped. It was
the only
like,
time in our music career that I feel like we've really held people in our hands waiting with bated breath for what was next. And because of the, don't get me wrong, I love the people at Republic.
Oh yeah, crap on them.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My lord.
Oh my gosh.
But it was like, you know, waiting everyone wait for Christmas morning to just kind of rewrap the presents they got last year.
Yeah, and like retrospect,
with a few new stocking stuffers.
Like, I love stocking stuffers.
Here's a candy bar.
It would have worked if it, like, you know, cause if it would have taken off, because if it would have, you know, reached the masses or whatever, like, you know, if it would have been bigger than the 757, it
reached a lot more people than.
Yeah, but at the same point, gosh, good lord. So if it would have like done its job to the max, or even like to closer to that, you know, level, it would have been awesome, because enough people would have been the first time they would have thought Inheritance. And it's pretty often we have people, Inheritance, I love your first album, but
right.
Generally speaking, our diehard fans are like Quill, Inheritance, and it's like it's kind of this little like hiccup as far as
I think you're overanalyzing it. People love the four songs on Inheritance.
Yeah, but like right on the front of the CD, like the little sticky, the all new single, what is it called? Switzerland.
Yeah, but you have to understand is like their idea, their business model was like, okay, 30,000 people have heard Switzerland, maybe 300,000 people are going to hear it this time. So to like a lot of people, it was an all new single. And for me, Ben, I actually like the sonic quality and of the arrangements better in Inheritance. Working with the producer was something that was so foreign to us.
We were really young.
Yeah. And it was so foreign to us that it kind of, it was a shock factor that kind of, none of us were honed to work with a producer. None of us were primed. We're not even primed for that, even prepared for it. So it going from having complete control to having to share that responsibility at such a, I mean, not young age, like, you know, pop stars, but they just do what they're told. And we didn't want to. So it zapped some life out of the project. But to me, I'm one of few that prefers listening to it, just because when you listen back to it, the sonic quality is pretty stunning.
It's pretty.
It's really pretty.
It sounds very good.
Quill is a lot more like fun or like energetic.
Yeah, there's a life to Quill an urgency that Inheritance doesn't capture. If you like the fact that it's recorded to 2-inch tape, used real echo chambers for reverb and all this like gearhead stuff, then the sonic quality to that is awesome. I remember having people comment like, oh, you guys are recording at Fairfax, you're using this analog board from like the 60s.
It was a Neve.
It was crazy.
Incredible stuff.
That's cool.
And so that was awesome for me to be able to walk in and be like, oh my gosh, Kevin, the producer, you used to have the Pink Floyd wall recording console in here, but you got rid of it because you wanted something more obscure. You're so hip. And I'm not saying that in a mocking way. I was just like, Kevin was a big personality that a lot of us clashed with. I'm an extrovert, so I didn't all the time, but that zapped some life out of the creative process for us. And I think made some people feel inferior.
And oh, no, he absolutely...
No,
I
mean...
You missed that.
He no, was, I mean, like, yeah, you gotta think about
that. That. He told me that my quill drum sounded like I was a kindergartner playing.
That's true. He was a... He's a... And, you know, it was, like, probably every... Not every other day. It was pretty often that he'd, like, apologize for the day before. Be like, hey, I'm sorry. I was just really rude. Or, like, one time he was, like, just sat us all down. And he was like, guys, yesterday I was an asshole. I'm sorry. Or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's great. We're getting to him. And then it was, like, the next day or whatever. The exact same stuff. And you're like, all right.
The song Switzerland that you guys, that a lot of people really gravitate towards, is, I mean, that's not a place in Virginia. So how'd you guys make the choice to go really outside the border on that one, and what was the inspiration for that?
Yeah, when I lived in Europe for a year before starting the band, I had a jarring experience there where, due to 18-year-olds not planning well, ended up sleeping outside in the cold behind this grocery store with my buddy, and he gets so mad. He's like, you got a song. I got nothing but a cold. So, it was actually while I was in Switzerland, and we ended up leaving the place we were at and went to Lake Geneva for a few days, just the two of us. We were traveling with two lady friends, not lady friends like that, just friends of the female variety.
Yeah.
Wasn't it, like, didn't you guys find out a few years ago that they, well, anyway, so the girls had a place to stay, apparently, ski chalet or whatever, and they're like, oh, the landlord doesn't really want you guys to stay here with us, so they went down back to the village where everything was closed and they couldn't get a hotel room, which led to them sleeping in the snow. We find out maybe 2 years ago that they made the landlord's story
up. Not they. Somebody did. Because they wanted to have some girl time.
Yeah.
Oh, so rude.
But I hope they never hear this because...
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want them to know that I told people about that.
Tell the world.
I'm a good...
Put it on iTunes.
But, no, that led to something that, while I think it's a quirky and goofy song, it led to where we are today. So at least it opened the doors.
Right. So, speaking of snow, you went and you released your Christmas EP under Universal, and then kind of moving forward from that, the option to continue with them wasn't renewed. So talk about how that all happened. Were you guys dropped, or did you guys say, let's just not continue and move forward?
This could be our moment to rewrite history.
Or not.
No, I'm kidding.
We decided to be hip again.
We were definitely dropped, but I think the feeling was very mutual, and there wasn't any hard feelings on anybody's part.
No.
Yeah, I mean...
That's how I remember it.
On my part, I was hustling to get demos to send to the label, and I was pushing the label every other day to open the next budget, honestly, because I wanted another shot. And I wanted to be able to write a record with them where we actually got to write songs on the label and not just re-record stuff we'd really already written.
Yeah.
So I was pushing really hard. And, you know, I sent stuff to them, and they're like, this stuff is so great. And I think that our team there was really excited about new stuff. But the end of the day, when you're owned by a French water company, you got to make the sales, you know? So it's all business, and I understand that. So it was parted amicably, but it was equally humbling and relieving because I didn't feel like we got a lot of communication after the record. The day the record dropped, communication just kind of went out the door. At least in a way that made things move in the right direction, or it just kind of fizzled out.
Right.
And so we... and
all these industry stories.
That's where we're at right now. We haven't gotten past that yet. So
yeah.
And then at that point, I remember I got the call from Jacob, and I was in the car with my buddy Lee. He does a lot of our photography and on speakerphone, and he heard it before anybody else. Only because I was on speakerphone because my phone was broken. Otherwise, as much as I love him, I'm in his wedding in April, I would not have told him first. But Yeah, so I'm on the phone, on speakerphone with a friend, and Jacob's like, I got some, it could be good or bad news. And I was like, what's up?
That's such a Jacob thing to say. What he
said. He's like, the label doesn't want to open the next budget. And I was just like, huh. And it was humbling, because I was, you know, getting signed to a major when you're 20 years old and getting told a lot of big promises does things to, I don't know, the way you think things are going to be. So.
Right.
Right. And at the same time, in retrospect, though, I feel like we definitely weren't prepared for those, like, hearing those things.
Yeah.
And I think if we went back in that exact same situation where we are now with the experiences we've had and the things we've learned, it probably would have been a different story to a certain extent. And there's no regrets there, but it was definitely, I think, I don't know, we weren't really prepared for it either way.
Yeah, it's like the first time you go to Nashville and you meet somebody and they're like, yeah, I got a band, we're going to be huge,
oh my
we're going to blow up.
So cool.
And you're like, oh my gosh, I just met, like, probably
you're a
like
superstar.
This guy probably won Grammys, and you find out like he's, you know, like barely like surviving on rent, and like
yeah, he's plays got 50 bucks in his bank account.
Yeah, and he plays like a snare in one band, and like borrows a friend's kicker.
I don't know what experiences you have in Nashville. I can honestly say I've never been to Nashville and met a musician and thought they were anybody.
Well, no,
I'm
just assume they
if
are.
I'm in Nashville, I'm like, okay, you example. Live with five guys and spend all your money on brewskis.
Yeah, but.
Welcome to Nashville.
Accurate.
And I think people at Universal, like, hoped that. It wasn't like they were just, like, trying to make us...
Yeah, they wanted
happy.
Us to be guys that lived
yeah.
together and drank beer in Nashville.
No, no, like, wanted us to make
That's
it.
Why they dropped us.
No, no, they were rooting for us. For
yeah,
sure.
But I mean, yeah, it's a company at the end of the day, and, you know, in bad investment, you just got to cut ties and move on, like...
I don't like to think about us as a bad investment.
I mean, it would have been a good
I mean,
investment.
We were. They didn't groom their investment very
well.
Well,
no, you take, like, you know, five bands, five darts, and throw them at the wall, and what sticks better, you keep, like, pushing into the wall, you know? Yeah. You know, the stuff that doesn't stick, you just kind of clean it off and move forward with the guy that's making the money. So, I mean,
right.
It just makes sense.
And oh, Switzerland, you've taken away my breath now once again. You left me with a sense of compassion for the world. Pick themselves up off the ground. Oh, Switzerland, I never thought I'd have you as a friend. I'm praying it was not at all pretend. I need you now to help pick me up from off the ground.
Well, after this, you guys kind of go back to your roots with the release of the next album, Virginia, the independent release. Can you guys talk about what it was like doing the distribution for that and stuff like that after you were used to having a label doing it for you? What was that experience like transitioning back to independent?
Virginia, so I think it's kind of back to Universal. A random friend of Jacob's, I guess like his mentor, Jacob, our manager at the time when we signed to Universal, when we flew out to meet with Universal, we just flew out to like a showcase for them in their offices in New York. And this random like friend of Jacob showed up, just like,
I
didn't know him at all. I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but he's super nice. So like,
he was at the River James show.
Jim was one there.
Oh, Jim was there.
Jim was there when we played
That's
for
right,
Patch and Avery. It was like this, and Denise was. It was so. Anyways, but so Virginia ended up being like, I guess, kind of the result of like that relationship there with Jim.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so Jim is, he's got a bunch of businesses, but he has a big heart for music. He used to
incredible
work in,
bass player.
Used to work in music as an engineer, and he just is always, he's the most loving dude ever, and he just loved on us and was like, hey, I want to help you guys with this next project. I have all this recording equipment, and we had this building on the ranch that was just the camp that I grew up on, Triple R Ranch, that was used for storage, that I thought was the coolest building ever. It's this big A-frame out in the trees there. And I remember I asked Jim and Dwayne Plummer, the director of the ranch, and my pops all to meet me out there one day. And I spent the whole day before kind of cleaning it up a little bit, not a bunch, just getting a bunch of junk out of it. and brought them in, and I said, hey, I want to convert this into a studio for the next, for the foreseeable future and the next record cycle. And I was so close with Dwayne, the director, that he was on board pretty much immediately. And Jim, I think on the way, was like, what is getting into Ben? He can come up with some weird ideas and fantasies. And then he got there and started walking around and was like, okay, this room is pretty cool. There's something special here. And honestly, that room to me kind of shaped the next, you know, 2 years of the band. From that point on, I cleaned the room up real well, threw a bunch of my kitschy art from my grandparents' attic that I had all over my room in high school when I was a thrift store addict up on the walls, and made it into a pretty vibey little spot.
Chill.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of artists reached out after Virginia, like, can we come record at the Wigwam? like, can we come record there? And I was like, no. I had this pipe dream. I'm not an engineer. I wish I was, of just converting into a studio and just retiring to that. Not retiring, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So coming to where we are now, you guys are, you mentioned a little bit earlier that some of the members have left. You're a four piece now, no more chicks and no more violin and stuff like that. So talk about what this means for your sound. Are you guys kind of going to verge away from that folky sound and do something different with your next release, or what does that mean for you guys now?
Oh, it,
first
it,
off, just to make sure we're all on the same page, Amos's wife, Anna, Ben's sister,
yeah,
Dan's daughter,
departed the band this past September. Was it?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So yeah. There's three dudes now, just three of us.
Okay, three dudes.
Yep.
The three Musketeers.
But
to answer your question, yes.
And
we have veered.
So we've veered heavily in a different direction. I think that a lot of our previous music was inspired from our Virginia roots and my time in Europe. And when I was writing a lot of this stuff, drew a lot vibe-wise from my years as a child in South America, growing up in the rainforest down there. And it's pretty, there's a lot of tribal stuff. It's like what you call, like, it's like jungle disco, if you will.
Hmm. Oh boy. Like George of the Jungle?
We've gone from mountaintop chamber music to jungle disco.
And it's still, there's still like some folk elements of the songs.
Well, we've always loved the having orchestral strings in our music, and Amos and Teresa are both extremely talented players, and Amos still plays the cello a lot. And we really wanted
not
to
with
preserve,
us, apparently.
We wanted to preserve that that aspect of our music because it's very near and dear to us. So I think we tried to make a record that it more reflects the kind of music that we entertain in our own personal lives and some of the music that some of our close peers are making, but also maintain that kind of, I don't know, sweeping cinematic quality that we've always tried to reach for.
Yeah,
sure.
And it's different. Like, I think by the time we were recording Inheritance, like, I grew up classically trained. Like, I think my first concert was like one of the ones we played as Lost Bison. Like, honestly, I'd never been to like a venue other than like a sand, you know, like, I believe it, like a fine arts theater or something. Yeah. So like, when it came to like my music, folk music wasn't like my style of music. Indie rock wasn't my style of music. It was like classical. So then I started playing bass in the band and started like growing there. And you know, it's like you just have to go listen to classic rock, and like that's where you go get it from. So it's like just kind of this latest stuff that we're kind of wrapping up here now. It's, I feel like it is more Andrew, Ben, Amos, where I think previously it was kind of like, yes, us people all like collectively came together and wrote like a folk album kind of with like Inheritance or Quill. We're not, it's really a lot like, and also like you take people out of the equation and it's like you just can't, like Dan, who was playing mandolin, you know, guitar and banjo, and Teresa with violin, and Anna with all things percussive, and you know, it's like you just can't do as much when it comes to like this incredible, like, I don't know, you could, all the like cool like mechanical things. You just can't do that. So it's like kind of like a challenge, yeah. But really just kind of open the door to like, hey, what do we want to do? Like,
yeah. And I think we've all had we've had some time over the past year and a half to kind of pursue our own personal lives, kind of with the band on the side. We didn't tour as much. We weren't.
Ben got married.
Working full time on an album. Yeah, Ben got married. He built a house. I learned how to cook. I don't know, Amos.
I got a cat.
You got a cat and started flipping cars.
Flipping cars.
Freaking, yeah.
Flipping whatever I can, man. You gotta pay the bills.
It's funny. Someone asked me what I did the other day. I do a lot of remodeling and construction work. So I said, I'm either singing a jam or slinging a hammer.
Nice.
Well done.
Boy.
Well played.
Just like Thor.
My singing boy. Singing a jammer, slinging a hammer.
That's pretty jam.
I don't know how... Yeah. Bam.
So coming back to this, it kind of...
We all sling him in our own way.
We approached this record definitely from new eyes, new ears.
Oh, this record that we're kind of wrapping up here now is the first time we wrote songs with a drummer. Like, we actually had a... It's because drums were kind of always the one thing. That and electric instruments, where we were always kind of like, oh, you know, we might maybe add some more drums here or there. But actually a drum kit and, like, a really talented drummer. This would have been the first project we actually did that and kind of collaborated with that. So it's probably where like the disco or like the I don't know the
and it's it disco
disco,
disco
is
this describes this music like folk described our other music.
Yeah. It's like, sure. it's acoustic instruments.
Weren't folk. Like, it wasn't like Dylan or, you know, Peter Paul and Mary or like actual folk, you know. It was something different. So it's not disco. It's not it's not like Saturday Night Fever.
No, there's just a beat underneath it now.
It's just it's just got a groove. You know,
right?
And
right.
Like, that's not necessarily the right word, but it
people
works.
Bob their heads now at our shows, which is kind of nice.
It's like rainforest disco folk.
Rainforest disco folk,
and that's, I think, what people have been waiting for in music, right? Rainforest disco music,
right?
It's a big void. There's a big void.
It is.
I think Arcade Fire did it, and not as many people paid attention on Reflector.
Yeah. What Andrew's saying is more.
They were the first to do it. Yeah.
Our record than Arcade Fire.
That's totally what I said.
There you go. That's right. Well, you know, if you, anything to get the hipsters hips to stir is what I say.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
It's so great getting some like dude in suspenders and a bow tie. Basically, one of us, you know, a couple years ago, but getting one of those like fans to like, I don't know, let go of the fact that his hands are in his pocket and, like, I don't know, make him dance.
Yeah, put him on his hips.
Like, it's, yeah, like, I mean, our live shows are, you know, high energy and, like, band will get out there and just get people pumped. And it's just funny because it's, like, before it was, like, let's get crazy. Let's turn this into a dance party. And it's, like, all these, like, acoustic instruments. And we're going, you know, crazy on them.
We made it happen, but it's...
But it's, like, now it's, like, you actually make it happen. It's, like, okay, we're not just, like, trying to get there. We're there.
Right. So when can we expect to get these beats into our bones? When are we going to get this this groove into our life?
What is with you today? What is this stuff?
It's Brent, the listeners need this.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually like the new John Malkovich movie where it's not going to get released till it's a post-mortem record. So when we die...
oh, gosh.
You're going to bury it and then...
And rise above?
Yeah.
We're gonna release.
We're gonna release a treasure map.
Oh yes!
It'll be at the end of the treasure map.
I love that.
Oh, that's a fun one. Maybe you could put the map inside the album, so that way.
Yeah, no, we'll sell the album. Like, you can go pick the CD up at like Target, and you open it up. There's no CD. There's just a treasure map.
Right. That's what I mean. So that way, they really buy it early, and then.
The best part about our side band is that like one kid would actually look for it and never find it.
I know this is all like, you know, hyperbole, but it's actually the best idea I've ever heard, and I would go to the ends of the earth to find it if there was a treasure.
Yeah, geotagging things and like that whole, that's a big market.
People
right now.
People love that
in
stuff.
There.
Yeah. We've actually messed around with that in the past.
It would have to be really, I'd feel like really, oh no, because everyone, I don't know, music's kind of open to interpretation, like, I mean, I feel like we write good music, but someone
on the internet, if anybody cares, just download
it. I hate that. Man, it ruins it in this world and age.
I think that people would respect the map, though.
They would respect the map, especially if you made a hard copy and nothing on the internet yet. Like, it would just be, and at least until that initial hard copy is found. And then your music video could be that moment where, like, 15 different people find it at the same time, and then they just celebrate.
Actually, all the music videos for this record are just going to be stolen footage from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm very
But when he says stolen, it's really an acronym for, like, we asked for permission and we got it. But we forgot the contract somewhere.
I just, you know, there are so many people out there that were like, I wish it was another Pirates movie. And finally.
That's me. That's me. Don't go saying something.
Literally only Ben.
No, no, they're doing another Pirates movie.
I know, and I'm so excited. It has Javier Bardem in it. He's like half dead. He got barnacles on his lips.
No, everyone in Pirates of the Caribbean is half dead. Every movie, there's a half dead person.
Tell that to Kira.
Well, no, she's not. Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's not in it. She figured it out.
We're on a first name basis.
Yeah, she was sick of waiting for Will to come back after the Green Flash.
Oh, Keira Knightley, man, I cannot. No, what's the other?
The Penelope, Green Flash.
No, Penelope Cruz. It's her that has the nasty teeth.
Makes me think of what would happen if Oscar came out of the trash can.
That's true.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, wait, hang on.
We wanted to know when the new stuff was going to be dropping. And you said postmortem.
We, when it's ready. So we're hoping end of the year. No sooner, but if there's not a good press campaign and radio campaign going, it could be pushed. If there is a great one, it could be pulled. But I'm speculating October, November.
This will be the first time.
That's a speculation.
Like Andrew said earlier, like this, we've kind of all like had a little space. And this, we've definitely, like, this is the... We've never taken this long to, like, write, record. And it's probably because it's just very different. We actually, you know, like, we collaborated with some people. And then we also just, like, wrote more as, like, a band as opposed to just kind of bringing songs to the table, which also happened. But it's, like, until the ducks are in a row, it just – this will be the first time we, you know, we don't just, like, quick, get it out, go. You know, it's, like, we really just want to make sure everything's right before we just, like, get behind something and have no idea, like – you know, if everything's ready to go.
So tell people how they can follow up with you guys, where they can find you, and keep up to date with when the new thing actually does come out.
Yeah, we are all over the socials. We
On the Facebook?
Facebook, Last Bison. The Facebook. Instagram, Last Bison.
Our website.
Website is thelastbison.com. Twitter is Last Bison.
Twitter's going to be dead in like 2 years.
It's going to be dead this year. I read an article on companies that are going to go out of business this year, and Twitter was there.
What are you guys talking about?
Bro, serious.
Doubt it.
I doubt it too.
We're not on Tinder.
That's a good thing.
I mean,
no, we could be.
As individuals, we are.
Ooh,
I don't know.
What if there was a band Tinder?
That would be that is another great idea, like band Tinder.
Oh my gosh. Hey guys, I swiped for Michael Bolton the other night.
What?
Yeah, in promotion of his new Netflix film, like, about love.
I watched that last night. That was so good. Oh my gosh.
Okay, here's an idea. What if we got a Tinder but used it for, like, a hey, hang out with the band?
No,
like,
honestly,
yeah, just actually use it for like a promotion.
Date hang out.
Oh my gosh. Ryan's told me people do that. They'll go, like, if they're on tour and they're in a city, they'll get on Tinder and they'll just say, like, hey, there's a show tonight. And then everybody swipes right. They just swipe right on everybody.
That's genius.
That's PR genius. That's PR genius right there.
I think it's terrible. But
it is terrible, and it's also playing with people's hearts. People go on Tinder for love, and that's it. And it's
to find the band that they love.
Exclusively love.
I don't know if that's it, my man.
I know that's why I'm on there.
People go on Tinder for something other than long-term love relationships.
You know, I was surprised when I heard it, too.
I need to rethink all of life.
Let's just rethink this real quick. If you got on Tinder to, like, have a long-term...
It's not Tinder.
No, it is. It's
you
Tinder.
You should refrain from Tinder. Saying if you got it's on Tinder.
So, if you got on it...
Somebody's
and you were successful, like, then the app would have no use for you. You could delete it. That's not good. That's not good for
really
business.
Match you with, like, people that you really want to match with, except for, like, once every week or something.
Man, that's...
You know how terrible and frustrating Tinder is?
Because, like, as a marketing move...
Yeah, we've given it way too much time here.
No, but as a marketing move...
moving on. We don't need to talk about it.
You don't want it to work because then you're, like...
Yeah.
Your clients don't come back.
That's the whole point.
That's so messed up. That is really messed up. It's, like, fascinating.
Anyways.
And you know what? That's where we're going to end this interview, right here. With a conversation on Tinder.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us. We loved it. It was a delight.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun being on YFBP.
Thank you for remembering the way that Dave said it, because no one else did.
LB loves YFBP.
Hey, swipe right for the last bison.
That's it. All right, thank you, fellas, so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Guys. Have a good one.
All right, you too.